Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! Three, two, one! The Gladiators!
Hello, welcome to another edition of the GladPod in association with Gladiators TV. I'm David Blackmore, and as always, joining me is the marvellous Jet.
I thought you were going to say joyful Jet, but marvellous.
Oh,
I don't know, the tonality was going into that. And I thought marvellous is marvellous. Just as good. Well, I thank you very much.
So ever since we sat down and worked out who we'd love to speak to, of course, Wolf is the one that we really, well, for me, that I really like to speak to. Obviously, him being in New Zealand does present a few hurdles.
Minor problem, yes.
I mean, we could do it down the line, but I think studio chats face-to-face are so much better, aren't they? But I've tried everything. So I'm sort of on the hunt for Wolf. And I saw one email that popped in this week. Someone who's hunted him down.
Oh, really?
Found him. Yeah, Ruth Davis. So she moved to New Zealand 10 years ago for a while. And she knew that Wolf lived there. Wolf was my biggest hero growing up, and he still is. So after living in New Zealand for about a month, I found out that he owned a gym about a 40-minute drive from me. Mm-hmm. 40 miles would be some effort. I took a couple of days to pluck up the courage and to go and see him.
Oh.
Gosh, that feeling when she would have walked into that gym.
Yeah.
I finally did. And when I walked into the gym, there he was, casually.
I was going to say, like, he wasn't there.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
There he was.
They said, yeah, he's no longer at this gym. No, yeah, there he was. He must have thought I was crazy when I told him I'd come to see him. But he was super friendly, and I had a couple of pictures with him, one of which she tweeted us yesterday, which I have retweeted. So, Ruth, thank you very much for sending that in. You have hunted down Wolf.
Thank you very much.
I just haven't had any reply from him.
I know. Oh, you say so innocently.
I know.
I'm sure when he gets... He's quite laid back, is Wolf, despite his TV persona. He is a very laid back guy. And I mean, he won't mind me saying that. He's very philosophical, can't say it, about life. You know what I mean? And he'll get round to it. I have the feeling he'll be like, yeah, you know, when I'm there and when I can. He will. He absolutely will. But we're probably going to need to have him encouraged slightly by a few more of you. So if you do know of another way to sort of say, hey, go talk to David and Jet, they're dying to catch up with you for the GladPod.
Are people listening to this podcast that are in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Can you drive? Can you drive to his gym? If you know where he is, can you drive to him? Can you see him? Because look, Instagram's great. I can message. I can leave comments on his posts. Mm. There is even an option to call him on Instagram, and I haven't had the answer there. So let's get something going. If you can tweet him, if you can Facebook him and Instagram him, just everyone do it. Just if everyone did it this week.
You may not really appreciate me, like, oh, I'm getting so sick of this. But actually, I don't know. From what little I know of him and working with him, he loves the affection towards Wolf in his life. So, yeah, come on, let's stroke the wolf.
If you get success, email us at thegladpod@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. So do tag us in if you're chasing him as well, and because that's going to make a huge difference as well. So I'm on the hunt for Wolf. You guys are now on the hunt for Wolf. But one person that we have managed to hunt down is the hunter.
We've hunted the hunter down.
And I have to say, so there is a slight backstory. When you came on to the show for 25 years since Gladiators at This Morning.
Yes.
You probably can't remember this as well, but I waited in the wings, you guys all came off, and I wanted to get a picture with you. And James wasn't having any of it. He insisted that he got in on the photo as well.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
There are two pictures that I was sent from Ken, who used to be the photographer on Gladiators, is now working at This Morning as a photographer. And he sent me two pictures and one of them. And even now I look back and I'm still just petrified that Hunter, because he's still, he was in great shape then. He's still in fantastic shape.
Possibly even slightly better. I'm he may even agree with me because of what he's put his body through in functional fitness and his knowledge. And he is the ultimate. But if you're in a room with him, it will go dark because he will blot out the lights. And you know what's so good, though, is his integrity about being the gladiator athlete eternally is never belied by the fact he's just a thoroughly nice guy as well.
Yeah, well, here is our chat with Hunter. There is a moment where I get a little bit scared because he gives me quite an evil look.
Oh, he's got a stare.
Yeah, it threw me off for a couple of minutes. See if you can listen out for that. But yeah, enjoy.
3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to Glad Pod. And I've been very excited about this one today because it is no less than James Hunter Crossley
in the studio
with us. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. Yeah. Well, you're looking really fit as ever.
Well, I just don't stop, do I? You know, I've had this kind of competitive training mentality since I was 12, and I'm hoping at some point it will die down, but it's still bubbling underneath there somewhere.
Never.
So, yeah.
What I don't understand, right, paint me into this picture, right? So, 15, you compete in this bodybuilding in those competitions, right?
Mr. York.
You get all like the teenage Mr. England, and you're aiming for Mr. Universe.
I was, yeah.
And then 19, suddenly, bam, you're on Gladiators.
Yeah, it was a big change because obviously being a bodybuilder is a very specific to lifting weights in the gym and tensing your muscles on stage. And that's basically the format of it. You know, you diet down for a competition, bulk up in the off season. And I went from there. I was in a magazine, actually. They compared me to Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. And there was a picture of Johnny Weissmuller and me, and they said, oh, is James Crossley kind of a modern-day Tarzan? And one of the producers, Andrew Norgay...
That's right, yeah.
...saw the picture, and that's basically what got me the audition. They contacted me. They came to see me in Mr. Britain, which was 2 weeks later. A week later, I was basically hitting John Anderson over the head with a pugil stick. Show some aggression, Hunter! And yeah, they took me on, but the reality was I couldn't do any of the games. It was such a different body to what you needed to be on Gladiators, and they took me on because they wanted somebody tall, they wanted somebody young, and I got on the show, and I had to completely change my training. The first year, I couldn't do any of the events.
Well, it was my first time on the rings. It wasn't too bad. You feel it on the arms. You've got to keep your legs, lower body really relaxed. All the movements with the backhand to get the swing. Apart from that, it was okay.
Barely get up the wall. I just remember being there in these kind of bodybuilding lycras, trying to clamber up this thing on my hands and knees, and Cobra just going straight past me. And yeah, a very distinct moment for me actually was I got off, I think it was the Atlasphere or the wall, and Nigel Lithgow, who was basically God for everybody, is a Hunter, you and I was just like mortified. And I remember actually going to the dressing room and I started crying because, you know, this was a dream come true for somebody that always wanted to do something with their body, but I didn't have the body to. And it wasn't that rocky moment where I went back that year and I just trained to be a gladiator for 12 months, twice a day. Event training for to be fit, training to be athletic. And then I came back the next year, a completely different physique, and then went on from there, really.
Well, and I think you've touched on it before as well. It's a different discipline completely from sort of bodybuilding, but it's that look. It's having that look, but also the sort of being able to do heptathlon or decathlon, isn't it?
Exactly that. And you had to become an athlete. And some of the guys were still in that mentality of lifting massive weights and how big they look. But the reality was, when you've got one of those lycras on, it kind of holds you in the right places. They threw a fake tan on you, and you know, and you're on television, so you tend to look a bit more buffed up anyway. So, and you're padded up, so it didn't really matter. If you were like 7 pounds heavier than me in muscle, the people aren't going to say, wow, he looks amazing. All they wanted to see was you win or lose in a bit of chat. And, you know, for me, being very competitive, I had an older brother as I grew up, and we were very competitive. And I suddenly had 7 older brothers, and I wanted to be the best. So it was just back into that mentality, really, of competitiveness.
Who was the most annoying older brother then?
Well, there was none really annoying. I mean, Cobra was the one that really took me under his wing, because I remember when we did the first photo shoot, I stayed at his house, and You know, his wife was making me dinners, and they couldn't. At this point, I was still in that kind of bodybuilding eating, and nobody could believe how much I ate. I seem to eat like three times more than anybody else. And yeah, he really looked after me right at the beginning. So yeah, he kind of, you know, I was 19 years old, so I was very wet behind the ears, and you know, I was a bit clueless. I've never really been to London before. I'd only been once or twice, and we had to come down here for the photo shoots, and I'm stood there, and there's jets and lightning and shadow, and I'm just a bit like, what's going on?
Had you seen the first series then?
I'd seen some of it, yeah. Yeah.
Because you would have been, what, 18 at that time? 18. So, you know, it was, I don't know, it was more family TV, but I'm guessing it just shows you that it didn't also reach the teenagers as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. And obviously being so interested in physiques and stuff as an 18-year-old, you know, it was kind of the dream to do a show like that. But, I mean, it seemed so distant to what I was doing because I was training to be Mr. Universe. That was kind of the target. So it didn't really enter my mind that it would be something on the table.
So what was it like when you were posing, you were competing, and Andy Norgate was actually in the audience? What was that like, you knowing you were actually being monitored to be a gladiator?
Because I was so in the bodybuilding mentality, all I was bothered about was winning that show. And I didn't really come into the equation that it was actually Andrew Norgate and Nigel Lithgow that were there.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were. It was Mr. Britain in Blackpool, and they both came to watch. I know they were looking for some girls, but I don't think they actually found any in the end. And yeah, it didn't. I wasn't nervous at all because, you know, bodybuilding was my thing. It was where I was very comfortable at that time, and I knew I was a good bodybuilder for a junior bodybuilder. So yeah, I wasn't really nervous at all then. Really, I mean, they were very casual afterwards. They just said, "Oh yeah, maybe you could come to London next week for an audition," and I'm like, "Yeah, okay."
And did you win?
I actually came second.
Did you?
Yeah, gosh. I didn't win it, yeah. And funnily enough, I'm still in touch with the guy that won it now. He still does a bit of training, obviously not to the same degree that I've carried on with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I came second. I mean, there was about 27 in the class. It was a massive class for juniors. But yeah, second, and I was mortified, you know, chatting to the judges and finding out what went wrong. And I actually had four first place.
Right.
It was, you know, it's how they score it. So, you know, but to be fair, it worked out quite well. But funnily enough, he got injured. He qualified for Mr. World, Junior Mr. World. He got injured. And then they said to me, right, we'd like you to go to Junior Mr. World in place of this guy. And that's as Gladiators was coming on, so I couldn't do it. And that would have led to Mr. Universe. So, you know, I was nearly there.
But I read somewhere that originally Hunter wasn't even going to be your name. You tried it for a day.
Well, when I did that audition down in London, which was when I was doing the John Anderson pugil sticks and rope climbing and whatever, I left LWT, I was at school, and we were going to LWT in a car to meet all the other gladiators who were having a meeting, and they said, we're going to call you Trident. And there was actually a few kids in the school who, they kind of got a murmur of what was going on, that I signed Trident and kind of did three, you know, I'd made up this sign by then.
Yeah.
I was going around with a Trident. And we were in the car, and they said, oh, actually, we've got a Trojan, maybe it's a little bit close, so we will go with Hunter. And then they introduced me as Hunter when I came in. So by that time, I guess it was nailed in stone, as it were.
And what do you think of Hunter as your name?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good name. It's, I don't think they look at you and think, you know, Wolf did look a little bit wolf-like, I suppose. Some of them, maybe there was a link, but yeah, no, I enjoyed the name.
And obviously we've spoken to a couple of the original, so first series ones, but for you coming in, did you feel like you had a lot to prove? Was it more nervous, do you think, because you're coming in after that first series?
I just think because it's in my DNA to be the best at everything I do, or be the best I can be at everything I do, I just felt so out of my depth there. My dad used to say to me when I was 8, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
And
this has kind of been, you know, and I'd gone on that show, and people don't think we were training all the time on these events. We got 2 days rehearsal on 12 events. So you literally get an hour or so on each event. So bear in mind, I've come off a bodybuilding stage. I've had these 2 days, I think three of the games I'd never even done. So I went in Atmospheres on one of the first shows. I'd never even been down the ramp before. So I was completely clueless, really. And this was very frustrating for me, who always wants to be the best I can be at something. And yet I'd gone in there completely the wrong body, no training, and really kind of just got away with it, really. So that's why it's the same with the contestants. A gladiator's got the same amount of training as the contestants. So it's about what you would do in your own time that would make you good at the games.
Did you, when at this stage, had you already kind of made an affinity with one particular event that you thought, that's going to be mine, I'm going to be the best at that?
I think because I was so bad at the wall, I mean, literally awful, that I really wanted to nail that.
Yeah.
And It was amazing how quickly, once I started climbing, I was climbing 3 or 4 days a week. And at one point I had a weighted backpack on. And then I was climbing with people on my back at one point, just using my arms. I mean, I went to town on it. Because the Gladiator Wall is speed climbing. Mm. Whereas if you watch, you know, proper rock climbers, there's a lot of legs and feet involved. Mm. Whereas our holds were quite big.
Yeah.
And if you, the wall was quite rough, so you could not put your feet on the holds, basically. So I was trying to hit every possible way of climbing this wall. And I think, yeah, the climbing events, and then that actually lent itself very much to the Pendulum, yes, which is a climbing event, which mm. also kind of lent itself to a degree to Hang Tough, which is like an upper body arm strength. So I think the climbing was the one that I really wanted to nail, and it really actually became my best event in the end. About year three, I was doing the wall in under 10 seconds.
I was going to say, could you do know what your timing was?
I did it in under 10. I think it was 9.97, yeah. And that was right up the middle.
And that's a 30-foot wall as well.
Yeah,
so
40-foot wall, yeah.
40-foot.
And what was the head start? Was it 15 seconds?
Well, again, they kept changing it because some of us got so good that, and they wanted a competition. So what they would do is they changed the route all the time. They kept constantly changing it, and this was quite frustrating because I'd have a route that I absolutely nailed, and then they'd say, right, we've got to make it fair for for them. It's about television. They didn't really care if you won or lost. What they wanted to do was how good it looked if you lost, how good it looked.
You want to get just close to grabbing them, or just grab their foot.
They would rather that. They would rather you just miss and the shoelace be in your hand and then the crowd gasping. But for us, it wasn't like that. We would sort of like, you know, we had to win or lose because you felt your job was on the line.
Both Mark and Adam know they'll be in expert hands unless they're quick about this climb. Saracen and Hunter are superb Gladiator Wall stars. And the nightmare begins. Hunter after Adam, Saracen on Mark. Hunter bounds up the wall and Adam's already in trouble. There's girlfriend Katie and Hunter actually overtaking the contender. What an embarrassing position for Adam to be in, looking straight into the face of disaster. Hunter flicks him away with one hand.
So, yeah, the wall was the one that I really wanted to nail. And, yeah, I mean, when they changed the route, what I would do, I'd get up a couple of hours earlier and turn up there with a piece of paper and I'd draw a map of it, of the new route. And then when I went to bed at night, I'd be studying this map and I'd be going through it in my head. So I had it visualised both sides. So I'd had three routes, the right side, the left side and the middle. Which, because how the contestants, I don't know if Paul mentioned this, Paul Noddings, but how the contestants found who they were going against, they flipped a coin and they would choose the Gladiator.
That's right.
So you'd have Jet and Saracen flip a coin, heads, right, who do you want to go against? Jet, please. So you could win the show on a flip of a coin if you got the right choices.
Because you see, certainly in the earlier episodes, when anyone's up against Wolf, they always go right up in their face, but then you see Shadow next to him, just staring. And the other person doesn't turn around and get in the face of Shadow. They just look.
Yeah, I think everybody had a different way of dealing with the contestants. I mean, Cobra would just like be joking around with them and having fun. And I think just because of the way I was, in that I was so competitive, I didn't even speak to them because, you know, we've broken the ice now. You have a bit of chat. I'm going toe-to-toe with you on the duel. You'd be, all right, he's all right. He's chat high. He's a nice enough chap. If I was just pacing around like a caged tiger and staring at you, not saying a word, next thing you know, we're toe-to-toe on the duel and I'm just looking at you like I want to eat you for lunch, you'd be like...
He's got that look.
Exactly.
It did make a big difference, I think, you know.
You weren't put off by the look of Hunter, were you?
Well, he looked pretty mean. Yeah, he's missed practice on his face.
And afterwards, I'd be all chatty with them, but it was just the way I was, how I dealt with it, really. Everybody was different. And what did you do?
I think I just flicked my hair and smiled all the time because I was so nervous. I hated... I'd move a lot because I hated posing. I hated the fact that, you know, if you had to stand and pose, that people can see your bum and your cellulite and all that. So I just keep free cartwheeling and
I didn't have that ability, you see.
Yeah. You just looked amazing.
Would you chat to the contestants and stuff though?
No, I'd get too nervous. So I couldn't do the whole "you're going down." I couldn't psych them out.
It's amazing the ritual you would have before. I don't know what yours was, but I would go off on my own and visualise the event. I'd do like a bit of meditation to get myself in the zone. And my mum taught me about this animal meditation where you should imagine you're a different animal for each, and you would actually kind of get that belief that you could do the skills of the animals.
I don't know what to say. Well done.
Thanks very much. Yeah, my mother's been sending me some animal power. So for each event, I've become a different animal and... I was a bit of a cheater there, pretty quick.
So if I was going at the wall, I'd imagine I was a monkey. If I was doing the duel, I'd imagine I was like a tiger or whatever. And I just get this belief in your head. Because for me, that the mental aspect, I've never been fast, strong. I've never been good at anything. But I've got that work ethic and I can get my mind into the zone of getting 100% involved, which kind of puts me on a level to be okay, basically.
See, I did not expect this at all because I just assumed you were always very confident and I just thought you just always felt that you were going to do well. You don't see the preparation.
No,
that went
beforehand. Massive. And the thing is, when you get a role of winning, there's actually more pressure on you to win. Hunter's going to win. And so then you have to stay in that same format because once you start stepping out of that, psychologically, you know, it's not the same prep or anything. So it was quite draining, you know, after one of the shows, not just physically, because the games are only a minute or so,
or 30
seconds long. You might do one or two in a show. But just that warm-up might take an hour and it took so much out of you. You would get back to the height, everyone would just be like that.
The hotel we were staying at. Mong out because it was so stressful. Because you've got to literally be in your peak performance just for that 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But you're spending hours kind of keeping your mental state.
I actually watched an episode the other day where I just skipped through the bits in between the events. I was done in 5 minutes because it's you got 30 seconds, but you've obviously got the build up before it. Yeah. You've got obviously, you know, the John Sachs talking about the crowd, everyone's chanting, and then the event happens and you've got the chat afterwards, which some of the early episodes are great, especially some of the ones that you do as well. When like, so how do you think about that? And just like, well, I thought it was a good hotel,
22-year-old voice,
and it was all like so nice. But then as the series goes on, it gets a bit more. Yeah, Wolf suddenly gets a bit more aggressive when he comes off and he wrestles
that's
people.
That's true.
Stuff.
What was it like for you? You remember we're in the hotel rooms and you'd get the paper slipped under the door at night with what events you'd be on the next day. Can you remember that?
Well, it was John Anderson who decided what events we did, and it, you know, they would let you know right at the last minute. And I think what they tried to do in the early shows to give everybody a fighting chance, they'd put people on, let's say, the wall who maybe weren't like Warrior on the wall or Rhino on the wall, who were not great climbers. No. They were like the heavies, if you like, of the show, and keep it competitive like that. And then as it got through to the quarters and the semi-finals and the finals, they'd put the ones who were more Jet on Hang Tough or Shadow on Jewel or whatever. People want to see people on specific events. But yeah, sometimes you'd put something on under your door and you'd be like, what? What's going on here? What's the one we used to throw the balls against people? Yeah, you know, just hit and run or something.
Hit and run.
What you got to do? Isn't like, you know, I mean, to be fair, you wouldn't get nervous for that.
No.
Throw balls at them on a bridge. But yeah, you're always on edge to what would be there. But I think, you know, I became known for, like, I suppose, 4 or 5 events. And then it tended to be the same 4 or 5 hours I was put on, really.
So what were the toughest events for you?
The hardest one for me to get was Hang Tough, actually. Mm-hmm. It took me about 3 years to get that. I guess, I mean, obviously doing all the climbing, it would seem it would be a natural thing, but I think when you're heavy, I think at that point I was about 17 stones and I just didn't get the knack of the swing. And then I think by year 3 I started to get it. I started to get quite comfortable on it. But yeah, for me that was the hardest one. What was your hardest?
Oh, anything like Jewel. I hated Jewel. I think I was only on it in 4.5 years once or twice.
People wanted to see you on Jewel though, didn't they? They would love that.
You wanted
to see it. The crowd wanted to see it, like proper old school, get Jet on Jewel.
Let's get her hitting.
Watching some of the earlier shows as well, I felt it was unfair for the female gladiators and contenders because the podiums didn't move. So the women's reach is always shorter. So they were like almost reaching over, whereas Shadow or Saracen's reach was massive, would just be like bang straight in.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually a lot closer than you think. When you stood on those things, it's a bit like a diving board. You look at a diving board and think, oh, that's all right. Then you get up there and you're like, and that was a bit like the Jewel, wasn't it?
You
looked at it and thought, oh, it doesn't look that high. But when you stood up there, it felt very high. And also feels a bit odd when you never know how you're going to fall. And that was the thing, is that it's, you know, a game like Polax, which was, I don't know, 40 feet or something.
Yep.
And it was lose-lose because it didn't matter if you won or lost, you still had to fall onto that mat.
So it was
really building up that confidence that you were invincible, really. That was the thing you had to do. So you go into these games and just not... I was never nervous about doing the game. I was more nervous about whether I'd win or lose.
Mm. But games aside, what for you, what was the toughest thing about being a gladiator? Was it that switch from bodybuilding to being more athletic?
Yeah, that was a big switch. But it was a switch I had the work ethic already nailed in me from bodybuilding to do it. And I quite enjoyed it, really, because it was completely changing my training.
Yeah.
What I used to do is I used to find something specific for each event. So we'd take, say, atmospheres, and we were a bit old school. I was in York at the time training at this kind of railway institute. So I'd be pushing a car around a car park for atmospheres. And then for Duel, we'd tie my feet together and I'd be boxing. For the wall, I'd be climbing with backpacks, weighted backpacks on an actual climbing wall. There was badminton courts near our gym, so we'd do tackling practice for powerball. So we found something for every single event to be as prepared as we could. And then obviously by year three, I'd done this for a couple of years. I walked into the events just feeling so confident because I knew I'd put the work in beforehand. And the thing is, this is great for the show, but in the real world, being able to wield a pugil stick doesn't really get you very far. But yeah, it was perfect for that show.
One thing I definitely wanted to ask you about was the Ultimate Gladiators competition. Now, I read somewhere, did you dislocate your shoulder? Was it at the very start of that?
Yeah, first event. Well, I'd already dislocated it, I think at that point, three times. And the initial dislocation was from powerball, from the tackle.
Okay.
And I did it in the live show, so I didn't miss any telly shows. We used to do live shows in Wembley in the middle of the year. Mm-hmm. And I did it then, and they took me out straight away, and I was, you know, pretty gutted about that. And they didn't want to do open surgery on it because I'd be out for 6 months, so I'd have missed the TV show. So they did what's called keyhole surgery, which recovers a lot faster. But the problem is, once I did it once, in total, I think I dislocated it six times. But yeah, the first event, my shoulder went. And I don't know if I should tell you this. Basically, this is back in the old school days of medicine. And the doctor, I said to him, look, okay, at that point in time, if he'd have said you'd lose your arm, but you'll win the show, I'd have said, OK, let's do it. That was my mentality.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking clearly. So he just fired so many painkillers in my shoulder, I couldn't feel it. He just said, come with me. He took me to a back room. Obviously, I won't mention his name.
But was that you saying to him, I want to carry on?
He had to have my agreement to do it. But there's actually, funnily enough, there's an interview with me and Ulrika in that. And you can see my shoulder almost come back out. And she goes, is your shoulder all right? Yeah, it's fine. Because I couldn't feel it. But I'd just come off the hang tough and I couldn't actually straighten my arm. And I remember I went against Wolf. So if you ever watch a show, you'll see my arms completely bent because I couldn't straighten it because the shoulder had come out.
Oh my gosh.
I was just trying to protect it. And but as complete luck, I beat Wolf, but it wasn't because I was better. It was because he missed a swing or something.
And I knew you wouldn't be happy with anything else than a win.
What I actually did, I saw Wolf go off and I saw the way my rings were swinging. The thing is, when you're going back on yourself, the rings are all over the place. So I waited and tried to go in line. So as my rings are swinging back, I was able to get hold of them.
And how's the shoulder bearing up?
Yeah, you know, we're getting there. A couple more events left, so fingers crossed we'll get through to the end.
All right, that's it for Hunter and Wolf.
And I was literally, but yeah, so it came out and then they had the ambulance ready for me. And as soon as the show was over, but I was, you know, for me, that show was everything to win that, because that was all about, to be the ultimate gladiator. It doesn't get better than that, does it? So, but yeah, it was probably not recommended. But thank you to the doctor, by the way. It was amazing because nobody knew, you know, you couldn't tell any of the producer or anything. It was all like, you know, done in kind of the locker room.
But does it say more about you? Or does it say how bad the other gladiators were that they couldn't beat you with a dislocated shoulder?
The thing is, I was very versatile in all the events, basically. And I think some were good on certain events, some were good on others, but as a spread, I was my thing. I wanted to be able to do any event. So I think I always had an advantage just because my body was kind of trained for that. But yeah, I mean, I worked hard for it. I mean, it was a lot of training over nine years to win that. So
well, and also because it's such a short window that you're actually competing, you've got like almost a year, haven't you, between each series to then go, okay, well, I'm not doing so well on X, let's change my training for.
And also, I knew this was the last show, we knew it was completely going to be the end, so it didn't really matter, you know, to cut my arm off if you like. Well, I'm not going to do now anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, what was that like when it was all over?
Well, I remember at the time, I didn't really drink during Gladiators. I had a few glasses of wine, but I didn't really, and I became really good friends with Ace Warren, and we just kind of, he moved to London quite recently, and but basically went out in January and came back in October. Because we just kind of lived our teenage years once Gladiators finished, you know. And we had, 80% of it I don't even remember, but we just had so much fun. And he's still a great friend of mine now, Warren. But yeah, it worked. So I did that, and then I retrained as an actor. So I did a 2-year course to train as an actor.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, well,
that,
I did. At that point, I'd done, I think, maybe 18 or 19 pantos at that point, pantomimes. And I really enjoyed being on stage, and I loved it, really. I mean, they were great fun, weren't they?
It seems to be every Gladiators panto.
Yeah, well, we all got offered it, and because we were obviously prime time television, it was a big audience draw, and it was a great money earner for us. So we did the Panthers, and I really enjoyed being on stage. And I thought, what am I going to do now? So I retrained as an actor, and I did acting for. I did probably 3 or 4 UK tours, and then I was very lucky. I signed up with the Peter Hall, the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I did 2 years.
As You Like It.
As You Like It in America, yeah. And this was with Rebecca Hall, who's now a movie star.
Yeah.
Dan Stevens, who's now a movie star. Me, who was playing Widow Twankey. So I did that for 2 years. Then I came back, and I thought I'd kind of made it as an actor then. I thought, well, this is it, I'm going to be. Mm. But then the reality was I'd gone from LA, New York, San Francisco, and it was back to Scarborough and Stoke-on-Trent and living in somebody's spare room for a week. And, you know, in America, the equity is much stronger, so you make more money. It's a better life as an actor, really. And so I gave that another 3 years. So I think I did 7 years in total. And then I did my last panto, which is, this was my 20th one. And I remember sat there as Abenaza with all his makeup on in some like little town. I think I was in Runcorn or somewhere, and I was just a bit like, this is it now. I've had enough. I want to have some roots. I want to have some stability. Mm. And so I stopped the acting after that.
Because you're in Emmerdale as well, were you?
Yeah, but I hadn't trained as an actor then. That was me basically fresh off a panto. In fact, I was doing panto.
But was it as yourself? Was it as Hunter
and
Hunter?
Yeah, basically what happened. So I was doing panto in Sunderland at the time. The storyline was they were having a tug-of-war competition. Is it the Wall Pack?
Yes.
Okay, and another pub. And Hunter drives his car around the corner, flips his car. They basically help him out the car because he's rolled his car. I'm talking like I'm in the third person. The Rock. I flip my car. And I say, oh, can you help us with this tug of war? And I basically go and help him with this tug of war for the Wall Pack. And then they help me with my car to get my car back on the road.
Welcome to the Wall Pack team. Wear this and you'll make an old lady very happy.
Who's that?
That's our new secret weapon, Dave.
I always thought being a soap actor was quite glamorous, but it's a nightmare. The days, endless days, freezing cold. I had to go back 4 times to film this because they lost lighting, it snowed, the continuity went. So they had to get me from Sunderland all the way down to wherever in Yorkshire they film it. I was sat around for like 6 hours for this each time for this tiny scene. And I remember I was messing around with Mandy Dingle. She was... in the show, wasn't she? What's her real name?
Lisa
Riley.
Yes.
Lisa Riley, yeah. And we became quite good friends because I'd gone back 4 times at this point.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, how strong are you anyway? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty strong. And my party trick at the time was I could get anybody to punch me in the stomach, right? And I'd just take it. Believe me, I don't do this anymore. This at the time was one of my party tricks. I said, punch me in the stomach as hard as you can. So she punched me in the stomach and I kind of jokingly stepped back and I fell down a bank into the river. No. I went into the river and everybody was in photos being taken, and because my Wall Pack tug of war outfit was wet, they had to stop filming.
Oh no.
I mean it cost them a fortune, this me rolling around in the river, because they only had one top, so they had to wash it, dry it, get it sorted. And everyone was just like, my God, Mandy Dingle's just taking Hunty out.
Absolutely brilliant. So take us a little bit through what life is like for you now, because I remember we met up a few years ago and you said, you know what, you know me, Di, I always have to have a goal. So where are you with that now? Because you've actually been a world record breaker.
Yeah, well, yeah. I started strongman maybe 10 years ago, novice strongman, and then I got into the masters, which is over 40s. I'm 46 now. And I started doing pretty well in the Masters, and I kind of really became all-encompassing in strongman. That became one of my goals. And I thought, well, you know, I was doing pretty well in competitions, and I thought I'd quite like to get a world record. And in the classic James Crossley obsessive manner, I found something called the Dinny Stones, and I found a gym that had replicas, and there was a guy called Mark Felix who had the world record, and he's been in World Strongest Man 11 times. So it was no mean feat. But I put my whole being into that for 4 months, and again, it was like my every thought for 4 months, waking up thinking about these bloody stones. But yeah, I got the world record, I think, 2 years ago. And
does it still stand?
No, it got broken. But to be fair, the guy that broke it's been trying to get it for about 10 years. He was, I mean, he's a grip. I'm not a grip specialist. I was just doing strongman. But the Dinny Stones is a grip. You've got a stone on basically on a rusty metal ring. The front stone's 188 kilos. The back stone's 144. And you have to lift them off the floor. and it's how long you can hold him off the floor. This was the record I did, and I think Mark Felix had about 31 seconds and I got 33 seconds. But yeah, I held it for a while, and the guy that's got it now, Mark Haydock, he's well deserved, because he's just all about grip. That's his thing. But I kind of got it and moved on. But now I'm doing some stones. I'm doing stone lifting rather than grip stone. So I've been lifting some stones in Iceland. I've just been out to Iceland.
Well,
do some strength trips there. And there's some stones that the sailors used to lift, and they range from 27 kilos to 154. And you lift it to your chest, and the sailors would get more money to feed their families if they could lift the bigger stones.
Oh, wow.
So the target, really, strongmen go there to lift the biggest stone, because it's 154 kilos. OK, it's heavy, but it's like butter. It's completely smooth. So it's a very difficult stone to lift.
Oh, OK, so it's that grip element, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. And I went out there, I don't know, maybe 4 months ago, and I got it to, like, there, but I didn't chest it. So in my head, I haven't done it. So that's my kind of current, a bit of stone lifting. But I'm not doing strongman anymore, because I managed to get to the world's last year, world's strongest master.
Wow.
And yeah, you can't go anywhere else from that. So, and I didn't want to keep it going, because I'm a strong bodybuilder at the end of the day. I'm not a strong man. I mean, strong men are much bigger than me. I'm 110 kilos. Mm. And I was going against guys there that were 190 kilos. Yeah. So it's, weight moves weight. If I'm pulling a truck and somebody's 70 kilos heavier, it's not really, my body's not designed for that. But it was an amazing experience. So yeah, I think that's going to be on telly soon, actually.
Is it?
On Channel 5. Yeah, it's not been out yet. So that was Official Strongman, Glenn Ross. So yeah, it was good. Good fun.
You went with the... You did you lead the group of UK Gladiators to South Africa?
That was
it was never shown here because it was so heavily advertised, wasn't it?
Yeah, so basically what happened is Gladiators finished, and I thought, what am I going to do? You know, I've got this trained for Glads all my life, basically, at this point. So I emailed the producer of South Africa and I said, can I come over and do a couple of shows as a guest? He was like, oh, that sounds brilliant. Could you bring a couple of other people with you? So I contacted a few of the Gladiators. I then contacted a guy called Roddy Mackay. Remember Roddy?
Yes.
Who's one of the contestants. And I knew Roddy had contact with a lot of the contestants. So I said, look, you sort the contestants out, I'll sort the Gladiators out. So I was in touch with the producer, and we basically agreed a deal, but they didn't really have much money to pay us because, South Africa didn't have massive money to pay people for TV shows. So they said, what we'll do, we'll pay you in experiences. So they took us to Sun City. We went to a safari, to Kruger National Park. I mean, to be fair, probably the most amazing experience of my life, the South Africa trip. We did the garden route, and then myself, Warren and Janie, that's Ace and Rio, decided to stay on an extra 3 weeks. And we went to Zimbabwe, and we did the rapids there. We did the bungee jump. We did everything. And
the bungee jump was a bit like pole axe, was it?
Well, the bungee jump...
You didn't come back up, though.
The deal was we were helping Zimbabwe tourism, and... nobody would do it, and I'd organised the whole trip, so I thought, well, I'm going to have to do it, because nobody would do the... They just said none of us are doing the... It was the highest in the world, I think, at the time, and I didn't want to do it. So I was kind of joking with the PR girl, saying, oh, look, if we do it together, I'll do it. And then there was this big kind of camp guy who was in charge of it all. That's an amazing idea, we'll tie you together. And I was like, but anyway, 2 minutes later, me and her are tied together, stood on this bridge. And I'm just thinking, and she's like, what are we doing? I don't know. And yeah, we did it as a tandem jump. We jumped off this bridge. But yeah, it didn't go well, actually, because we were such different weights. She was like this tiny little girl.
Yeah.
As you go down, but then obviously you bounce up a few times. And as we bounced up, the rope just grazed across her face. And she had this rope burn right across her face where the... Yeah.
But what was the actual being out there on that show? Because was it kind of the UK show but on budget?
Exactly that. It was very low budget compared to our show, yeah. In fact, I was majorly concerned about the safety, and I would try and say to the girls, put a helmet on, but because they just saw me as the hunter, that kind of... They didn't really listen to me very much. So I'd be like, put your helmet on, I want them to see my hair. So it was a little bit touch and go, I would say. I remember one of the girls, one of the contestants, got second-degree burns on her leg from the atmosphere pod.
Yes.
When the smoke goes off.
Yeah.
And
I still dispute that it doesn't always go off when the contestants go over.
And she had a really bad burn, and her parents were there. It was, but I kind of sorted it out, and then I put everything in his hands. I didn't want to be in charge.
No,
of
no,
the,
yeah.
you know, that my plan was just to go out there and have a little holiday and do a couple of shows, but yeah. It escalated really into three shows, and I think there was 12 gladiators or 10 gladiators and 10 contestants, but it was an amazing, it was a trip of a lifetime, it really was. But yeah, the set was just a bit smaller, there wasn't as much money gone into it, but they did a great job, to be fair to them. They were fantastic hosts, fantastic.
And when did you realise that, especially starting as Gladiator in series two, that it was getting bigger? Because it definitely grew, didn't it, from series one to series two? And when was the first thing you remember being recognised?
Well, it was a very gradual rise, because I remember when my the job I was at, I was a printer when Gladiator started, and they wouldn't give me the time off to film the series. So we filmed the series, and then we went to America. And we went out to America for a couple of weeks. There was four of us went out to America. And I came back and I had no money. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I was signing on the dole at this point. And people in York thought I was the contestant. They, for some reason, your local paper thought I was going to be a contestant, because I couldn't go back to my old job, because I knew that the work was going to come in. And then eventually I started to get bits and pieces. But it wasn't like a sudden, it was like a really slow, because I think we filmed it, let's say, in June. Then it went on telly in September, and it was like a really slow burn for it coming. So
of course, yeah, you would have done it all, and then you were sitting
exactly,
out and
yeah,
waiting.
Bear in mind, we film the shows in 2 or 3 weeks,
yeah,
and then you're waiting maybe 5 or 6 months for it to come out. So yeah. I had this period where I was kind of doing nothing
and just walking around thinking, people should know who I am.
I didn't really, because obviously I hadn't been on television. But yeah, and then it takes a couple of years to get established, doesn't it? It wasn't like year one, because bear in mind, year one I was like a floundering trout on everything. So it was only when I started to get good at stuff, people would say, oh, Hunter. I remember actually the first time somebody came up to me and said, oh, I bought your doll today, and he had a Hunter doll in his hand, and that was quite a wow moment.
He was sticking pins in it,
and he had a Hunter doll.
What about today? Do people still, especially in the gym, are people like, oh, you're...
Well, I go to the same... I go to five gyms, and I go to the same five gyms, so I'm, like, boring for them now, you know. But, yeah, I mean, if someone's the right age group, and it tends to be people in their late 30s, and if one person clocks it, then it's like dominoes. But, it's not like a daily thing.
There must have been some... Obviously, you're talking about the pantos and how many you've done of those, but there must have been some pretty random sort of PAs or openings that you've done.
The biggest one were the Christmas lights. We'd go to the Christmas lights to turn them on. There'd be 10,000 people there. But I think one of the best ones we did was Euro Disney. We went out there to do Open Space Mountain. So they had all these celebrities. And I just remember being sat next to Cliff Richard on Space Mountain. This is a bit weird. And Paul Young asking if I could have pictures with his kids.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
All out there. So yeah, I mean, that was one of the best jobs we did. And then we went out again. And we lit the fireworks, because they have a big bonfire night party there, and we were the ones that lighting the fireworks. So there were a couple of amazing jobs like that. But then, you know, for all of those jobs, there were some that were, you know, in some fate somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and you'd just be like, this is a bit weird. And I'm stood in my lycra.
Yeah, there must get a moment when you arrive and you go, oh, no.
Yeah, you never really knew, because this was the great thing about it. We did the whole filming in three or four weeks. Then you're doing these PAs. You might do 2 a week, 4 a week, 3 a week. You never really knew. I mean, they'd ring me up, the office, and he'd say, oh, are you free on this day? And I'd say, yeah. He said, oh, we'd like to do a video with the Spice Girls. And you're just like, oh, okay. You know, such random stuff. And then the panto, we did that every year, which was probably 6 weeks at the end. And then at some point, they took us out to Mauritius just to do bits and pieces of filming us.
And also to build up on your tan.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they called it a training week, but it was more of a let's just do some filming and look like we're training for a week.
And sorry, Dad.
No, I was just going to say.
The most random place that you've been a fan has bumped into you.
Well, what's really random is I go to Australia. And then somebody will come up to me and say, oh, you know my mum, I'm from York. You know, it doesn't matter where you go, everyone seems to know me from York.
Yeah, I think Yorkshire, I think that's a Yorkshire thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost like you have a beacon.
That's right, yeah, yeah. So yeah, it doesn't matter where you go. When we were on television, you know, you'd get recognised everywhere.
What was that moment like when you first put your Hunter costume on? What did you think of the costumes?
Well, the funny thing is, you look back at it now and you can see how much, for example, your genitalia is sticking out. And I just remember at the time, that wouldn't have even crossed my mind. And I remember Warrior, he would always say, oh, we've got to put potatoes down there and stuff. And because I was so focused on wanting to do the events, I didn't really think about people looking at my genitalia. It wouldn't even cross my mind. And he was obsessed with it. He was obsessed with it, wasn't he? And for me, it wasn't, I didn't even notice I was wearing it, really. I always felt a bit like RoboCop. I had to have, like this now when I go to the gym, actually, I have to have so many pads and wraps on. So I had every pad and wrap humanly possible on. It made me feel a bit like RoboCop, which made me feel a bit more, you know, like I was like a warrior or like a dressed for war, you know. But so even though we had these little lycras on, you got knee pads on, I had ankle straps on, yeah. I had wrist supports, I had elbow wraps, I had a shoulder harness on once the shoulder went. So I was so padded up, it didn't really feel like I was just wearing. I mean, the girl's got the short end of the stick there, really. I mean, especially Jack, you know, her outfit.
Got it was like smaller.
Someone had washed it at 90 degrees every year. It's got smaller and smaller and smaller.
No comment.
If you could rewind the clock and go back to that Blackpool and being sort of spoken about in terms of joining Gladiators, and they said, right, you can start, you can do it all over again, would you do it all again?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Would you do anything differently? Change your hair?
Well, I don't have much choice now. I've got about 60 hats instead. Yeah, I tell you, when I cut my hair, I remember I ran out into the arena and somebody had a sign. It said, Hunter, get your hair cut. And I thought, okay, the people have spoken.
Yeah, but it wasn't the stolen 90s, though, was it? Today, it would have been, I think it would have been fine.
I think because at the time, you know, you start to believe you're a warrior. I started to believe I was Hercules, I suppose, to a degree in my head. I was, you know, and I just thought, if the hair grows longer, you'll be stronger. But I wasn't. It didn't work.
And do you think Gladiators should return? We're getting close to the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, I think obviously Sky tried to...
What did you make of Sky?
Well, the problem was they tried to give them all forced personalities.
That's right.
Me and Diane were doing the interviews with them.
Oh, you were backstage,
yeah. We were backstage and they'd have these kind of... They'd come out like... they'd have this, right, you've got to be this way and you've got... And they didn't... There was none of their own personality in their chat. And the people I spoke to are big Gladiators fans. None of them had Sky. So I think if it's going to come out, it's got to be on a terrestrial channel. And I actually thought the setup was great with the water. And I mean, it's exactly what America did. Mm. Their arena and everything was great. But it was just a shame that they almost panicked and they invited us all back and got us all to do the shows. And they made us look like mugs, really. They dressed us up like trapeze artists in these ridiculous outfits with sequins. In fact, Saracen walked out. He just said, I'm not doing this. It's ridiculous. Mm. Full of sequins and then... None of us had trained. They gave us like a week's notice. And this was the time when I was like out with Warren from January to October. So I was like made of glass. I couldn't do any of the games. And I managed to actually knock Spartan off the jaw. But to be fair, he jumped off. I'd tore my pec in rehearsals because my body was so undertrained.
Yeah.
My pec just tore straight away. So yeah, I think they didn't do themselves any favours by bringing us back and, you know, trying to, and then they had Wolfpack every show. And I think if they'd committed to the format and stuck it out, it might have done okay. But instead, you know, even John Anderson walked off set in the end. He just said, this has become a pantomime, you know, it's ridiculous. And it's a shame because the Gladiators on there were great people and they were great athletes, but
fabulous.
You know, the setup was all wrong.
So it's almost as well like the original Gladiators, the original series, it was people's personalities and it was, you know, they were them. And whereas with the Sky version, it was more that they were saying, you're going to be X, you're going to be Y.
Yeah, they never gave us any advice on that, which is probably, I mean, Wolf came up with his personality himself. Yeah. They didn't want him to be nasty. He said, oh, I really think this is a good idea. And they were like, no, we want you to smile and be a nice guy. He goes, no, let me give it a try. And they were like, oh, okay.
Have you ever seen him smile?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, actually, last time I saw him, he was drinking pina coladas. That's his drink of choice. It doesn't really go with his personality, does it? Pina colada for Wolf Fleet. But, yeah, no, they never gave us any help as far as interviews. Because I remember we'd be planning what to say after the event. Mm. And then you think, oh, if I win... And the problem with planning what to say is you don't live in the moment.
Yeah.
So let's say I did someone on the duel and his helmet came off or his shoe came off or something.
Yeah.
I'd come up with something like, big or small, it doesn't matter how they're built. Because I'd have planned this and they'd be looking at me thinking, right, we'll cut that one out. Which really, as we got more, you know, more comfortable with it, you just say, oh, his trainer fell off. And, you know, you just be very... Actually, to be fair, Saracen was the best at interviews because he was just so in the moment and very natural about it and very relaxed. And I used to watch him and think that and learn from that, really, because you've got to be kind of what's going on in that moment is what you want to comment on, not something you've planned 2 days ago on. This jibber jabber coming out, you know.
So who, out of all the Gladiators, who did you get along with the best?
Well, it went through phases because it was obviously 9 years, it was quite a long time. So initially me and Trojan were very good friends, and then me and Rhino became very good friends, and then me and Warren became very good friends. And me and Warren still are very good friends, to be fair. I mean, Warren lives in York now. Yeah, he married a girl from York and he's up there. So, yeah, there was kind of... But I got on with all the guys. There was no animosity between us, and they were all very supportive, to be fair. You know, Warrior would always be like, do me proud, you know, and I was always the youngest, so I always felt like I wanted to prove myself to everybody, you know, especially these guys, because they were, I mean, some of the guys were like 15 years old. Well, Wolf, when I was 19, he was 42.
Yeah.
So I was always the youngest, so I kind of feel like you have to, it's like the youngest sibling, isn't it? You have to prove yourself.
You got any kind of things that you can remember that particularly stand out in terms of your fondest memories?
Well, the trips were amazing. Going to Australia, I mean, that was an amazing trip, wasn't it? What an incredible opportunity to do the shows in Australia.
Andrew, no points. Are you disappointed?
Oh, no. Have a look at him.
Yes, I have had a good look at him, actually. He's even cuter with his helmet off.
And South Africa. And one of the things I do now is I try and go away as often as possible because, you know, you can't take away with you a nice watch or a bag of money. But the memories and the best memories I have of Gladiators are of the trips we had abroad, of the these amazing experiences we had. And I mean, obviously being at the hotel, all of us together in Birmingham, great memories every time we were filming. I mean, amazing times, really. So, yeah, there's so much, really, when you kind of look back.
Well, I think that's... will you come back and see us again, by the way?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, there's more stories in there. You'll leave
now and go,
you forget the stories, and then you'll say something and it'll trigger a memory, you know, which is great. And sometimes people ask me something and I'll go off on a tangent. I think I've completely forgotten about that moment, and then just something had triggered the memory.
So, James Hunter from the Gladiators, we're going to have to say goodbye just for now, but you're going to come back, aren't you?
Yeah.
Thanking you.
Bye.
That was the legend Hunter. What did you make of it, David?
I wasn't sure what to expect when he was going to come in today. I mean, he's certainly a massive presence when he enters any room, not just from his shape, but also his personality as well.
Absolutely.
Doesn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, I always thought he was like the golden boy. I think we all nicknamed him the golden boy when he first arrived in the arena, because of course he didn't start with us until season two. And what's always... I love the bit where he said, it's in my DNA to be the best. And you know what? Knowing him from all the years since we gladiated, I love being able to say that, actually. He has literally... Everything he has done, he has become the best he can possibly be at it. And amongst the field, whether it was acting or World's Strongest Man, breaking a world record. I mean... how can you ever top that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, and he was in absolutely fantastic shape when we spoke to him. And I think actually you were saying he's probably almost in better shape than he was perhaps in his glad days.
It's true. I mean, after the glad days, he really kind of took I've spent my life in fitness and teaching fitness and things like Pilates, but he actually became almost a yoga master. So can you imagine that big hulk of a guy that walked into the arena, the legend that is Hunter, being on a beach somewhere or up a mountain somewhere doing headstands and handstands with people being raised above his head while he's meditating. It's just, there are some beautiful pictures around of him doing that, I think, on his Insta and Twitter account. It's well worth checking out, and it's quite something.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. I've noticed quite a bit on his Instagram recently. He's doing a headstand here or there. But I have to say, I thought that interview was brutally honest. He said it how it was. I think I liked at the beginning when the producers spotted him and he was being compared to Tarzan, and how he kind of almost wanted to keep that mentality, even to the extent that he was growing his hair that little bit longer, but also his kind of honesty that he was completely rubbish at the start, but how he managed to return for the next series with a different physique. And he tried to replicate the events, like pushing cars for atmospheres and all the different bits that he was doing to make sure when he came back for the next series,
he was
the best that he could
be. Super intelligent training. I mean, even back in those days to kind of replicate the events by thinking about what the biomechanical, there's a bit of sports science for you, the biomechanical knowledge of what you'd have to replicate to literally, yes, pushing a big weight at that sort of level through the body. And pushing a car would have done that entirely. And it just, for me, his level of his, I call him the thinking gladiator. He would, yes, be a force to be reckoned with that, but
he would always think things through logically, and I relate very strongly to that. Not that I think too logically, I'm not that intelligent, but I used to have to think through how I'd do an event from a... It's like as a gymnast, as a kid, it's like, well, if I have that angle of elevation and if I do it at that speed or if I slow it down... And I think that when you work with your body as your tool has to become part of it, and I'm pretty sure all the rest of the other gladiators did it in their own way too.
Yeah, when he was saying about the wall and how he wanted to master that and how he would train on it, he'd get there earlier to train on it, and then they would change the route that you'd have to go up to try and even throw him even more, and how he just adapted to it. But also I liked the animal meditation method you're saying about the yoga as well, and just how, you know, for Hang Tough he you know pictured himself being like a kind of a monkey, and for the different events he'd be like a different animal. I mean, he went full pelt with it.
He did. And in fact, you just reminded me then, particularly about the wall, he was one of the first lads to do what we call a jump start. And if you notice, he would run at the wall as soon as his whistle went. He'd run at the wall and actually literally jump, so he'd clear at least five foot to get right up onto a much higher grip to catch up with the contender. Now, we weren't doing that in the first series. We were doing a beat of it. But when he walked onto the studio floor and we first started watching him, really working hard and getting better and getting faster at the events to become what he had become and what he is, it was definitely that. And I remember thinking, oh, a jump start. Yes, I'm going to try and replicate that on the girls' wall on both sides, because, as you said, they started changing it so the contender could then choose which side of the wall they could chase their they could be chased by their gladiator on. But by that point, we've all got really good at one side of the wall or the other, sort of a bit of one-trick pony type thing. But he became so super dynamic and flexible at pretty much everything, you know, and that's why he did become the legend.
Yeah, well, and I think it was... I think for him, or I think something from the outside and having spoken to him, like I felt like I really warmed to him. And as you said, that it was very much in his DNA to be the best at everything. And he kind of had the natural ability to be able to adjust to the different challenges ahead of him. But he also knew that he had to train hard in order to do that, which is why I know that we spoke about the Ultimate Gladiator, and I've now managed to put in a clip because he mentions about speaking to Eureka and saying about, you know, the shoulder's okay and you know, a few more challenges left. And but the Ultimate Gladiator meant so much to him. I watched the whole episode back, and every time he speaks, you can just tell he's determined, he's driven. He wanted to end this kind of gladiator spell with him being referred to as the Ultimate Gladiator, for it to stand the test of time.
Absolutely. And it's that posture with that slight nod that he gives. Have you noticed that? When he's being interviewed, there's a kind of a swagger and a nod and that determination behind that strong jawline. And yeah, and that's because it's in his DNA.
Well, but the thing that surprised me as well is obviously we researched before we spoke to him, certainly to find out what he had been getting up to in recently. But then to go on to things like the acting, which I'm not sure that I'd necessarily, if somebody said to me, so what did Hunter go on to afterwards? I don't think acting and Shakespeare would be what I would put him down for, but it just shows you just how versatile this man is, that he can almost turn his hand to anything. And then he went, of course, did the world's strongest master as well, and you know, you see the world record that he got, although he did stress it was quite a short time he had that world record, but he still did get a world record. And what else he's got left to come up with.
Just, I remember a lovely conversation. We did a job a couple of years ago filming something, one of these kind of looking back over like game shows of the 90s and things like that. And we're often put together, which I really enjoy and I feel really appreciative of it, of being able to do that when producers ask us to do that together. And I think we went out for some food afterwards before I got my train back or whatever. And he said, you know me, Diane, I just have to have something to keep working towards. So I think we've got to watch this space, really, as to what that next thing will be.
Absolutely. And, you know, you two both did the sort of backstage stuff on Sky Revival. So if Gladiators came back again, and seeing as that they tend to always put you two together, maybe it's the perfect combination to presenting the new Gladiators.
I love you saying that, David. I love you saying that. Thank you. It would be an absolute honour and an absolute pleasure.
Do you agree? Do the listeners agree that listening to this podcast, should we have Di and James as the fronting the new look gladiators. Would you like to see them doing more together? Maybe they should be doing Insta lives together. I think that would be great to see. But what stories have you guys got about Hunter? We've already had quite a few coming in because I know that he loved a PA, did Hunter, but do get in touch. So we've got our email, which is thegladpod@gmail.com.
And of course, you can contact us with that vote of whether you think myself and Hunter should actually do a two-header or a double, I don't know, two, whatever we want to call it. Be careful with what you're saying. We'd like us to both do. And of course, you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and they're all at The Glad Pod.
And we'll see you next week.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the might of...